Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Good Morning Football!
Hey everyone, welcome to Good Morning Football! We are presented by Old Trapper Beef Jerky. I'm Kay Adams. Mike Garofalo is here. We have Sean O'Hara, Super Bowl champ, Peter Schrager as well. Peter is going to be on the sidelines for an epic game, doubleheader on Saturday. Everybody, Colts, Patriots in the desert on Saturday night, Christmas night. Schrags will be there ahead of that game. We've got a big one in Green Bay. We've got the Green Bay Packers welcoming the Browns to town on an early week. Lots of playoff implications, but it all kicks off week 16 tonight on Thursday Night Football. So let's hit the lead block.
Lead block.
It's happening. TNF only on NFL Network. The playoff chase is on. We're here for it. The Niners, this is what's happening. They're fighting for their postseason lives. The Titans have another division title in their sights. Do not let it slip away on your home turf at Nissan Stadium. Niners Titans Week 16 starts here tonight at 8 p.m. only on NFL Network. Cameron Wolf joining us, bearing the conditions in Nashville, Tennessee this morning. Happy Christmas week to you. Happy season finale of TNF. We're so happy to have you on the show, Cameron Wolf. Back in week 10, the Niners took down their division rivals, the Rams. How did that win sort of, sort of flip the script on the entire season?
Okay, Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas to everyone at home. Remember, the 49ers were one of those teams we thought we're going to have to write off. They had lost five of their last six games going into that Rams game. They were 3-5. We were wondering, hey, is this 49ers team, you know, dead? But Kyle Shanahan stood in front of that team that Saturday before the game and said, we're going back to what we do. We're going to run the ball 40 times. And guys in the room, their eyes lit up. 40 times? In this era? They ran the ball 44 times, beat the Rams badly, and really sold home that physical mentality that they've been for a lot of their tenure here. And Kyle Juszczyk told me it reminded them of that 2019 team they had when they made that Super Bowl run, and they got back to what they did best, that physicality. So as we've seen them win five of their last six games, they've got to a team that loves to run the ball. Smash mouth football is a hybrid style, but on defense, they are also playing bully ball. So that's the key for the 49ers turnaround.
Smash mouth, bully ball. Love it, Cameron, bringing all the terms that are getting us excited for Thursday Night Football here. Cameron, we know Kyle Shanahan regarded as an offensive guru. What's he done this season to further that reputation?
Mikey G, it starts with Deebo Samuel. Look at a guy like him. He got his first Pro Bowl nomination, well-deserved, last night. He's a guy who's become their number one receiver. But what's really made him special is his evolution as a running back. And I dug into his evolution this week. I found out he spends no time in the running back room. It's all in the receiver room. He just gets tips from his running back coach, Bobby Turner. But most of it's natural. And it makes sense with a guy named Deebo, named after one of the characters in one of my favorite movies, Friday, that you see him being physical, hybrid player. You guys showed it on Angry Runs this week, but that run where he knocked the defender's mouthpiece in the air and it falls out, that's who Deebo is. And really his evolution as a receiver and a runner has made the 49ers offense more difficult to defend. I talked to Titan safety Kevin Byard this week. He compared his running style to Alvin Kamara. Think about that, a receiver being compared to one of the best running backs in the league. I think the 49ers have one of the most diverse sets of skill sets with George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, and I'm eager to see how they do against that Titans defense tonight.
He's one of those Christmas gifts that's just multi-use, like one of those pans that it can boil, it can fry, it can saute, it can do whatever you want. It cleans itself. That's Deebo Samuel. I would not be surprised if he's on Angry Runs next week, if Schrager features him on Cool Plays Bro, if he has a receiving touchdown, a rushing touchdown. He will be all over the field and really exciting to watch and a really good factor. And I love that you gave him some love. Cameron Wolf joining us from Tennessee. We'll talk to you in a little bit. Big playoff implications for this one. So let's check it out here. Taking a look at the picture before week 16 kicks off. We've got five teams at the top here of the NFC with 10 plus wins. And in the sixth seed, the surging 49ers looking pretty good of late. Pretty good is an understatement. They've won five of their last six. So we're in the final stretch right now. Peter, do you think, I know you don't think they're a dark horse because you talked about them ahead of the season and they are on fire right now. What do you think of the Niners?
I think they are a very good team. I think they are perfectly placed as the 5 seed in the NFC right now, and they might win tonight on the road going into Tennessee with both teams looking to, you know, solidify their playoff status. I don't know if they're going to be able to compete with these other big dogs, though, in the NFC if their pass defense does not get better. Their pass rush is great. We know Bosa and Armstead are coming, and those guys are great. But I watch a lot of Niners football. They have a giant Achilles heel on this team, and it's its pass defense. It's its cornerback position. Josh Norman's on one side, and right now it's this hodgepodge of Ambry Thomas, the rookie out of Michigan, and it's Deontay Johnson if he's healthy and he's good to go. And they're getting torched week after week. Ja'Marr Chase put a show on a couple weeks ago in a loss, but was just absolutely destroying number 20, Thomas. Now look, it's one position. It's cornerback. Can you shade that? Can you find a way to get safety help with Jaquaski Tartt and Jimmy Ward, who have been playing well? Yes. But it is such an eyesore that I look at this team, I got to think that Tannehill's going to try to exploit it tonight. This cornerback situation gives me hesitance as well, because you're eventually going to have to go up against Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, and all those wide receivers that are stars for them. I hate picking on a rookie player. Number 20, Ambry Thomas, if you are watching, step up tonight. Show us that there is no Achilles heel and that I can take this Niners defense seriously for the long haul, because at some point, teams are going to start picking on them exclusively at that spot, and they're going to have quarterbacks capable of doing it. So are they a dark horse? They're better than a dark horse. Are they a true contender? They need to shore up that defensive backfield before we really consider them in that conversation.
Yeah, Shregs, I'm with you. And look, I'm going to ask for a request right now from our producers. If they could play some Katy Perry Dark Horse over this next B-roll, I'd really appreciate it, because all everybody wants to know is, do you really want to play with magic? Are you ready for a perfect storm? A perfect storm?
Because
what you're getting with this 49ers offense right now. The perfect storm of Deebo Samuel, Kyle Juszczyk, George Kittle, Trent Williams, everybody working with synergy and violently. Look, this offense, it would have been music to my ears to hear Kyle Shanahan come in and say, we are going to run the ball 40 times. People talk about 40 burgers with points. No, give me 40 carries. Let us inflict punishment. And guess what? This isn't just, you know, 3 yards and a cloud of dust. This isn't Army-Navy running the ball 40 to 45 times. These are explosive plays. These are Deebo Samuel lined up as running back in the backfield, jet sweeps. In the last 6 weeks, the 49ers have the third most explosive runs. That's runs over 15 yards. And it's amazing how they're able to do this with all the different formations, different personnel. You've got Juszczyk and Kittle lined up in the backfield, Deebo lined up as a tight end, and then somehow, some way, magically, they shift and all of a sudden Deebo's getting the football, and you don't even know who has the ball. So I love how physical this offense has been. I think that translates. And listen, when you go on the road, there are two things that are portable: a good run defense and a good run game. And I think that's exactly what the 49ers have to hang their hat on right now. I didn't even talk about Nick Bosa and the season he's having, but this offense right now, yeah, if you're calling him a dark horse, it's as a good thing, like Katy Perry.
I think dark horse is a good way to describe them, because this 5 out of 6 game streak that they are on right now, it really began. It started with that win against the Rams on Monday night, which everybody said, all right, that's nice, that's cool, but almost was kind of treated as not fluky, but, well, they can't really dig themselves out of this hole that they created early, because it's about these big nationally televised games. And that Indianapolis game that dropped them to 2-4, that ugly, rainy night, I think that's stuck with a lot of people. And these games that they've won lately have been 1 o'clock games. They played the Jaguars, Minnesota, which was a 500 team at the time, Seattle, which was not doing well, and they lost that game. Cincinnati was a 1 o'clock game. Atlanta, they were supposed to take care of business. They did. Like, they need that big primetime game where they make a statement. Well, that's where tonight enters. So if they come out tonight and they play the way that they're supposed to play, and they play their brand of football, and they win this game with everybody across the nation watching to now make it 6 out of 7, then I think the dark horse label goes away and you talk about them as a legitimate contender in the postseason, Kay.
Yeah, let's show these. I know we keep saying, we keep reading, we keep seeing the tweets, 5 out of the last 6. To me, it is impressive. I was like, okay, can they win 6 of 7? But let's take a look at who they beat, because I see 3 playoff teams. I don't honestly care what time they played or what the window was. three playoff teams in this stretch. They've won 5 out of 6. And they beat up Atlanta last week in a game that had huge implications for playoff positioning. They knew what was up for grabs and they went and got it. They're playing at such a high level right now. All I hear from Schrager, former players, Super Bowl champions, Hall of Famers, is playing hot right now. Who's heating up? You can't tell me they're not firing on all cylinders with Bosa, Kittle, and Debo playing the way they are. And I would not, if I was any team in the NFC, want to face this squad in the playoffs. They're unique. They're multifaceted. They're run game. You never know what you're going to get. So, it's hard to prepare for this team if you're a defense. So I think they're hot and you need to be watching them against those Titans tonight right here on NFL Network. Let's get Mike Garofolo in here. Let's do the whole split box thing. There it is. Hey, COVID-19, huge issue in the NFL and beyond in the world right now. It is surging. So what is the latest as far as our lens is concerned?
Yeah, we've got head coaches affected right now, Kay. Nick Sirianni, the latest, along with Robert Saleh for the Jets. But Sirianni will be coaching remotely for the Eagles this week. And on Sunday, if he is not cleared, it will be Kevin Petullo serving as the acting head coach. Petullo is the pass game coordinator. He's sort of involved in some of the situational stuff anyway. So Sirianni saying, well, that disrupts everybody else the least to allow Petullo to do that, because Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator, will call plays. Sirianni saying, well, Steichen and I kind of call plays together on Sunday. Steichen, the one that relays it into the headset. So that'll remain intact if Sirianni is not cleared by Sunday. Robert Saleh, the Jets head coach, he was feeling symptomatic, so he tested, and he tested positive. So Ron Middleton now in line to serve as the acting head coach. Middleton running practice. Yesterday's Saleh, just like Sirianni, going to try to do as much as he can remotely, but as a head coach, you're not there in the room with the guys. You're not there to talk to them on Sunday. So Middleton gets an opportunity to show what he can do. And speaking of a guy who was not with his team this past weekend, but will be going forward, that is Kevin Stefanski. He has been cleared to return as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. So the Browns relieved to have him back. And it'll be Baker Mayfield at quarterback if Mayfield can get cleared. The Browns hopeful that that will be the case. We shall see. We'll keep you posted on that one, Kay.
Browns Packers coverage begins at 2 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. I earlier said Colts Patriots. That's me muscle memorying the promo from last doubleheader. Nope. It's the Colts and the Cardinals out in the desert with Peter Schrager on the sidelines. Christmas Day, unwrap this beautiful gift from the NFL. Big playoff implications. Action kicks off at 3:30 Eastern. Browns in Lambeau taking on Aaron Rodgers and the Red Hot Packers. NFL Network and Amazon Prime. Pre-game coverage before that. Then 8:15 at Jonathan Taylor leading the Colts into battle against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Could he secure an MVP, that Jonathan Taylor, under the bright lights of primetime action Christmas Day, Christmas night, NFL Network, and the NFL app. Right now, it is time for a refresh presented to you by Subway. Our very own Jeffrey Chedia has everything you need to know ahead of the matchup between the Steelers and the Chiefs, a big one in the AFC on Sunday.
Thanks, Kay. And this week's game between the Steelers and the Chiefs has a ton of AFC playoff implications. For the Chiefs, it's a chance to clinch a playoff spot and potentially the AFC West title if the Chargers lose. For the Steelers at 7-6-1, they are playing for their playoff lives, trying to find a way to stay in the hunt. And this game is going to be interesting because of COVID-19. The Chiefs have a number of players on the list, 13 right now. They hope to have some of those guys back, but two big names here, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, tested positive this week. If they aren't there, that offense could struggle. And as for the Steelers, they know what offensive struggles have been like all season long because they haven't been able to get their offense into a rhythm that often. And so you're talking about a defensive matchup here where TJ Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick, the guys on that side of the football may have to make some plays to make this game interesting. But regardless, we know that this game means a lot to both teams and it will say a lot about what happens in January. And now we'll send it back to UK.
All right, Mr. Chedia, love ya. Merry Christmas to you. Let's take a look at the AFC playoff picture. Yeah, big stakes, as he's saying. The Bengals, the only team with a spot in the postseason right now, in the 4 seed, the Ravens and Steelers, right on the bubble at 8-9. The Browns do have some work to do. They play the Packers at Lambeau on Christmas Day. They are sitting in that 12th spot. The division is the tightest in the league right now. Bengals in first at 8-6. Right behind them, the Ravens in the AFC North, also 8-6. The Steelers holding the third place spot at 7-6-1. And finally, after losing to the Raiders on Monday, the Browns are last at 7-7. I think I said that game was played on a Tuesday. No, it was a Monday in Cleveland. So it really is anybody's division, gentlemen. It all's going to come down to that week 18 game that I'm not quite comfortable getting. Week 18 is a thing in the NFL. Shrakes, which AFC North team do you think is most intriguing? Three games to go.
Yeah, look, you talk to a Ravens fan right now, and they are lamenting the loss against the Packers, and they're saying, "Well, we should have gone to overtime, or we shouldn't have gone for two against the Steelers." Well, that's all said and done. That's in the rearview mirror. You can't change those outcomes. You still got three games left, and the Ravens are fascinating to me because Lamar didn't practice on Wednesday. He did not practice Wednesday, and there's hope that he can return from this bone bruise, but it might be Mr. Huntley, Snoop, again. And if it is, they're going to have to go against the Bengals in a must-win with their backup quarterback, who actually looked outstanding on Sunday. Lamar, it goes beyond just these next three games. Can he get on the field? We hope. What do you do with Lamar this offseason? At one point, we're like, give him $40 million. Well, Lamar hasn't had the season everyone expected. He's been injured. He's been out with COVID. He's been out with another illness. And gosh, they look like they could play okay with Huntley without him. So I want to see Lamar on the field the next 3 weeks. I want to see him find a way to carry this team and maybe get them the victories and then get them to the playoffs. But I think for the first time since Lamar's gotten there, there's questions about Lamar. And there might be some questions about Harbaugh. He's not going anywhere. He's one of the made men in the league. But for the first time that I can remember, since Harbaugh took over in 07, the fan base is questioning some of the decision-making. And did we give away the season by not just going to overtime or trying to fight to go to overtime last week? Literally, I think this man is the most beloved coach by the local fan base than any coach in the entire NFL. And the more that we see online, the more that you see amongst Ravens message boards, there are questions about the decision making and whether or not this season has been handled the way that it should have been down the stretch. Of course, hindsight's 20/20. They went for it at the end of the game twice. They're 0-2. That's going to happen. Sometimes it will. If they're 2-2, we'd be saying he's coach of the year.
Shregs, all great points right there. And coach of the year, absolutely dealing with everything that Baltimore has had to deal with this season. The injuries alone would have brought a lot of coaches to their knees. I think for Baltimore, the fact that they're sitting here right now with this opportunity, given all of that that's happened, is phenomenal. Now, if their divisional record at 1-3 right now might come back to haunt them down the road, as you were explaining. But I look at this division, and I feel like Joe Burrow from the Bengals has just kind of put his stamp on this division. The last time we saw these two teams play each other, they dominated the game. Joe Burrow had a career night, 415 yards passing, three touchdowns. There's one of them to Evans right there. But it was to Ja'Marr Chase that had the big game that had us all talking about, did the Bengals just run away with this division? Look, they've stubbed their toe a couple times here and there. But offensively, their explosive plays is what has made them my favorite in this division right now. And then when you look at the defense, what they're doing, I just talked about the Denver Broncos game. They won that game 15-10. The last time that they played the Baltimore Ravens, this defense stifled Lamar Jackson. Nobody could seem to shut him down, and yet they sacked him five times. They contained him. They frustrated him. And I think when you look at the way that they're getting after the quarterback right now, this Bengals team right now is dominating games up front. Trey Hendrickson, he's got 13 sacks right now. He's one half sack away from breaking the Bengals franchise record for sacks in a season. Quietly, one of the best statistical seasons by defensive linemen in Bengals history. And then Larry Ogunjobi inside, those two have been a really nice 1-2 punch. So when you have guys like that down the stretch right now, you need to win a couple games to get in the playoffs. I really like what they're doing. Trey Hendrickson also leading the NFL right now in quarterback pressures. So even when he doesn't get credit for the sack, Mike G, woo! He's hitting the quarterback, affecting the throw, affecting the plays.
I'm staying there with the Bengals, and I'm going to put a button on that defensive point that you're talking about. You ever see defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo during the game? They get shots. That guy's fired up, right? And that defense has taken on his personality. You look at the numbers. Yeah, they're fourth in run defense, but some of the other numbers you go, oh, okay, not great. They don't tell the whole story. I've been watching this Bengals team closely all year. That defense has been put in tough positions, asked to come through late in the game a lot of times, short fields, and they have done that. So, yeah, I'm really impressed with their defense. But back to that offense, Joe Mixon named to the Pro Bowl last night, the first Bengals running back to be named to the Pro Bowl since Rudy Johnson in 2004. Did you know that? I guarantee you Peter Schrager knew that. So, but I'm looking at this offense, and Sean, you talked about it. They've stubbed their toe a little bit since that Baltimore game. I don't know, you know, when we're going to see that offense again, but it's there. I look at this Bengals team, I look at that offense, and I say, I remember Joe Burrow throwing for 400 yards and Ja'Marr Chase absolutely dominating a really good secondary. That team, you're still in there. I know you're in there. But if this team's really going to have be a team that you're going to reckon with in the postseason, we need to see that offense again. So that's why when I see that word intriguing, this is the team that pops up to me, because Cincinnati has been winning games and staying afloat and staying atop the division despite the fact that offensively they haven't hit that stride. Let's see if they can do it down the stretch here.
You both know how I feel about the Bengals. So I'll mention the Steelers, who I actually think are really intriguing. They're 7-6-1 just on the outside. And we saw this defense come alive last week. You know, obviously TJ Watt's been doing his thing week in, week out this season. But what they did against the Titans was intriguing to me. Here's what they have down the stretch. They have the Chiefs, which, of course, Jeff Shadia talked to us about, big game there. Then they have the Browns and the Ravens. And I'm not convinced they're going to get any of those teams' best punch. You have the Chiefs they might face without Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. You know how banged up the Browns squad is. The Ravens are banged up too. So to me, war of attrition style, the AFC North could be theirs. Keep your eyes on those Steelers up against those Chiefs in week 16. Okay, more Good Morning Football. That was your refresh brought to you by Subway. We'll be right back on Good Morning Football with another round of Mixed Bag Trivia. Shregs, go!
Comeback Player of the Year themed based on Nick Bosa's amazing 2021 season. All right, it's a Thursday. We do a segment called Mixed Bag Trivia. And today's theme, a little holiday edition of Comeback Player of the Year. We got Tannehill being pulled out. He'll be the quarterback under one of these squads tonight in this Titans 49ers game. Tannehill is the 2019 Comeback Player of the Year for his career resurgence with the Titans. But Nick Bosa right now has 15 sacks coming off a devastating knee injury, and he is the favorite for Comeback Player of the Year this year. So you got Bosa versus Tannehill. Let's do a Comeback Player of the Year trivia game. The history of the award is rich, and we start with Sean O'Hara. Sean, are you ready for the first question on Comeback Player of the Year themed Mixed Bag Trivia?
Yeah, Shregs, I'm ready to rock and roll. Can I just say, I love the segment. I love the award. It's also the one award that no player ever wants to win, because I don't ever want to have the injury.
I hear you, and let's get right to it, because someone has won it twice. Here is the question, Sean, and your choices. Let's bring up the clues. Which NFL player has won Comeback Player of the Year for two different franchises? Is it Thomas Davis, Chad Pennington, Alex Smith, or Napoleon McCallum?
Ooh, wow, Napoleon McCallum. Just hearing that name makes me cringe. That injury that he suffered when he was playing for the Raiders was remarkable. Alex Smith, of course we know about all his injuries. You know what? I feel like I want to go with A, Thomas Davis. I feel like he's had three ACL injuries, came back from them all. I think he might be the only player in the history of the NFL to have done that. So I'll go with A, Thomas Davis.
It's a good guess, and we love Thomas Davis, and he did play for multiple franchises. But the winner's Chad Pennington. Chad Pennington has won Comeback Player of the Year two different times. He first did it in 2006 when he returned from two different rotator cuff surgeries and led the Jets to a 10-win season. And then 2 years later, after being traded during being released after the Jets went and got Brett Favre, he goes to the Dolphins and takes a 1-15 team from the year before and leads them to the AFC East title. It's the year that Matt Castle was in and Brett Favre was the quarterback for the Jets. The Dolphins actually won the division that year. The Wildcat team, Chad Pennington was the quarterback. He won Comeback Player of the Year 2 out of 3 NFL seasons. One of the truly remarkable feats in NFL history.
I see you, Chad. I think Tony Sperano was coaching for that Wildcat team, wasn't he?
He was. Rest late Tony Sperano. Mike, you ready for yours?
I am ready, and I hope that the question is, who is the least worthy Comeback Player of the Year? Because I know the answer. It was Phillip Rivers in 2014. Not because he didn't play well, but because I'm still not sure what he came back from. But go ahead, Peter.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hear you. He took his team to the playoffs after 2 years of not. Comeback Player of the Year. There's a lot of questions about this award. Mike, here we go. Doug Flutie won Comeback Player of the Year as a member of which NFL team after spending the previous 8 years in Canada playing for the CFL? The Chargers, the Patriots, the Bills, or the Bears?
I'm trying to remember the order of Doug's career here, and I'm probably going to get this wrong. Wasn't he with the Patriots when he did the drop kick? I don't think that was the comeback season. A or C? A or C? Let's go with A.
A is wrong. It's actually C. It's the Buffalo Bills. They gave him his shot in the NFL again. This guy comes in, he replaces an injured Rob Johnson, and they go and they win 7 of 10 games. One of his most memorable plays was here, the game-winning bootleg touchdown he had against the Jaguars where he runs it in for a touchdown. Here it is. I asked for this one specifically. I love this. This is the final play of the game. Flutie running, celebrating. It's everything. It's the spikes it at a cameraman. It's it. Flutie came back from Canada and goes to the Bills. And, of course, you know the rest of his career. He'd go to San Diego where he would be a mentor to both Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers on that Chargers team. But yes, Mike, it was Buffalo.
Sad. All right. I mean, one of my last two choices, so I'm going to take credit for that.
It was. All right, Kay, are you ready for the
trash about Phillip Rivers? Let's go, Shregs.
Let's go. All right.
I've never done
Rob Gronkowski won this award.
Yes.
In 2015. NFL Honors. The year's 2015. It was in Phoenix. Okay, who hosted that award ceremony? 2015, Rob Gronkowski. Was it Tiffany Haddish? Was it John Hamm? Was it Seth Meyers? Or was it our dear friend of Good Morning Football, Mr. Paul Rudd?
Oh my gosh. I think this is before Tiffany Haddish really had her rise to fame. I was at the Super Bowl. Gronk was playing in the Super Bowl, I think. Was this Seahawks Patriots?
It was Seahawks Patriots. Gronk is huge in this game.
It's either John Hamm or Paul Rudd. I'm going to give it to John Hamm's a football fan, hockey fan, St. Louis guy. I'm going to say it's Paul Rudd because I feel like I've seen highlights of it, but I did not watch the show.
Okay, Paul Rudd's a worthy answer. He's been a presenter many times. But the answer is neither John Hamm or Paul Rudd. Seth Meyers hosted the NFL Honors.
Did he really?
The fourth annual. He came out there. He roasted the Patriots. He roasted Larry Fitzgerald. He roasted Andrew Luck. Seth Meyers was
the
host.
Did you see Jordan?
Your great Rob Gronkowski.
Jordan of WME Endeavor fame was sitting next to... Oh, my God.
There he was, chuckling about. Everyone was in the crowd. All the stars. Yeah, apparently.
I didn't watch that one. I was at that Super Bowl studying very hard.
Okay, nice. Last one, guys. The video clue. Are we ready? The Packers had a Comeback Player of the Year in 2016. He sealed up the award on this play. Week 15, 2016, 27-27 against the Bears. What happens on this play? Here are the clues. A 60-yard pass to Randall Cobb. A 60-yard Eddie Lacy run. A 60-yard Aaron Rodgers scramble. Or a 60-yard pass to Jordy Nelson. We'll start with Mike. We'll go to Kay. And then we'll go to Sean. Mike, what do you say?
I'm going D. I believe Jordy Nelson had torn his ACL the previous year, I want to say. So I'm going D, Jordy Nelson.
I refuse to answer all of these things that happened against my Chicago Bears, and I'm a little mad at you. This is your question. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I'm going with D. It's absolutely Jordy Nelson. Can I just say on a side note, I love that each one of these plays is 60 yards. I'm assuming that you're paying homage to the number that I used to wear.
Oh, yeah.
That was all for you, big fella. 6-0, 60 cent. You know we love you, Sean. Let's click on the play button, Anthony, and let's see who sealed up the comeback player of the year with a backbreaking play against the Chicago Bears. Kevin Burkhart, take it away.
Rodgers has time. Now some pressure. Throws it deep. Jordy Nelson. He's got it inside the 20. A bomb from Rodgers to Nelson.
They would go on and kick the game-winning field goal on this play. It really sealed it up for Jordy. Mike is right. Jordy Nelson missed the entire 2015 season, came back in 2016 off the ACL, and won Comeback Player of the Year because he led the NFL in touchdown receptions with 14. Rodgers, Nelson, one of the great combinations of the 2000s, and a Comeback Player of the Year. We'll see one tonight in Tannehill, and we might see another one in Bosa. Let's enjoy this game.
Our next guest, a member of one of the most prolific offenses in history, the greatest show on turf. You might have heard about it. It's a movie now. We were just talking about that with him during the break. We're talking about casting, who should have played him, whatever. He was an all-pro, racked up 13,000 receiving yards over his 11-year career. Please welcome to the show former NFL receiver Torrey Holt. What's happening, Torrey?
Not much, man. Happy holidays to everyone, and it's good to be up this morning and vibing with y'all.
Love it. Got the sun shining in. Beautiful. Thank you for joining us. Your former teammate, Isaac Bruce, finally got his gold jacket inducted as part of the 2020 Hall of Fame class. You're also one of the greatest receivers to ever play. When you reflect on your career, what type of impact do you believe you left on the game that should solidify your place in Canton one day? And that day should have been a while ago, but go ahead.
Oh, wow. No, you know what? I'm super excited for Isaac finally going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Had an opportunity to be with him in Los Angeles when he got his ring of excellence. And it was good to celebrate that with Ike. And you know, what we did as ball players collectively goes down in the record books. Individually, I've done things that have went in the record books as well. I hold NFL records. I was drafted 6th overall. Look, you know, I was part of the greatest show on turf. You know, we changed the way our entire conference drafted their corners just so they can try to cover us. And then, you know, I had fun. I thought I respected the game. I carried the torch from the other wide receivers, other Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receivers. I thought I carried the torch really well. Consistent, played with passion, was able to win divisional championships, world championships. Represented the St. Louis, the city of St. Louis and the St. Louis Rams to the highest degree, man. So, look, I think if you watch what's happening in today's games in regards to the routes, how crafty some of these wide receivers are, I was part of that, starting that movement, certainly. And feel like I have felt like I put together a Hall of Fame caliber career.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We certainly co-sign with you on that. The greatest show on turf. And now let's talk about the team that's playing in SoFi, if you will. I love that you're joining us right now from your office, which I can tell reeks of rich mahogany. I'm sure there's many leather-bound books on the other side of it. And you've got the dope swivel chair. But let's talk about your Rams, man. 10-4. They're tied for first in the division. And Matt Stafford's, he's playing some good football right now. You know better than anybody. It's all about how you're playing at the end of the season. Can you get on a heater? What do you think about the Rams going on a big run right here and making a big run in the playoffs?
No, I'm excited for this football team. Look, let's tip our hats to the LA Rams as well as the Seattle Seahawks, all the teams actually this past week, getting to the game, being that they all had to battle with COVID, reshuffling of the lineup throughout the week. They wasn't sure who was going to play, who was going to start. And then they roll out a team against the Seattle Seahawks, a divisional game, and was able to win that game. Now, it wasn't pretty by some folks' standards, or the eye test didn't look good, but they got out of there with the W. I thought defensively, Aaron Donald, so disruptive. We saw Von Miller get in the action and get a sack. Leonard Floyd's getting a sack. Jalen Ramsey is one of the best corners, if not the best corner in the National Football League. And then offensively, if they stay clean, Meaning if they protect the football, don't turn it over, balance offensively with Sony Michel, Devin Henderson, those guys going over 100 yards collectively, and then Matthew Stafford being solid and sound with the ball. He was 21 for 29, I think, against the Seahawks, and two touchdowns. He did have the interception, but I think he is playing down the last 3 weeks. He's played really good football, particularly not turning it over. And then everybody's talking about Cooper Kupp and the job that he's doing. Yes, he should be up for the MVP talk. Yes, he should be up for the MVP offensive player talk as well. He's just Mr. Consistent. Odell Beckham is finding his way. Van Jefferson, you see Vance Skowronek now getting involved in the game. They got Tyler Higbee. So I think this football team is set up. If they stay healthy, they got to clean up some things interior in the offensive line. And, Sean, you know how critical that is. They got to clean that up, the interior offensive line. But they got enough talent, enough skill. If they're healthy, have everybody back, they should play very well the rest of the regular season as they gear themselves up for the playoffs.
All right, Tori, you mentioned Cooper Kupp. Obviously, you're one of the greatest receivers in Rams franchise history. Tyreek Hill has 102 catches. Cooper Kupp has 20 more, and he's the leader. Like 20 more than the number two guy.
Yeah.
This is one of the greatest wide receiver seasons ever. You said he should be in consideration, but we don't give this award to non-quarterbacks anymore. We just give it to the best quarterback. Make the case. Is Cooper Kupp worthy of the MVP? And make the case why this is the year he's the guy.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, look at what he's doing. I mean, from beginning of the season to now. And even when Matthew Stafford was having his moments where he wasn't playing as well, Cooper Kupp was still constant. He was still consistent. He was still steady. Look, 1,625 yards, 122 receptions, 14 touchdowns, 24 catches of 20-plus yards, 8 catches of 40-plus yards. No one thinks of Cooper Kupp being a deep threat guy. He has 8 catches for 40-plus yards, 75 first downs, and 657 yards after the catch. And teams know that he's going to get the ball. I think Sean McVay does a really good job of moving him around. His football IQ is incredible. You know, I went back and looked at DraftNasty.com write-up on him. Shouts out to my man Corey Chase. And this is what they said about Cooper Kupp. He is 6'2", 210 pounds. He's athletic, outstanding body control, quickness, carries his pads really well, vision. His hand-eye coordination is at an all-time high. He was extremely productive when he was in college, guys. He was extremely productive when he was in college. A four-time All-American. That's just carried over to the National Football League. He runs through the football. He has great hands. He's on my all-hands team, by the way, because of his ability to catch the football. And then a lot of people don't know this. He plays with an attitude. So Cooper Kupp certainly should be in the MVP race, should be in the talk. If not for the MVP, which I think, again, he should be up for, the offensive MVP as well. He has been Mr. Consistent. Love the way he goes about the game. I had a chance to sit down with him a couple weeks ago and learned a lot about him. He sees the game through a quarterback's lens, like his ability to comprehend information that's provided to him and then to go out on the football field and to carry it out. Cooper Kupp does that every single week. He's doing it at the highest of level, better than anybody in the game right now.
Tori Holt with the Hall of Fame worthy research. When are you coming to be a guest host on Good Morning Football all 3 hours?
Anytime you guys are ready, y'all know how to get to me. I'm more than ready and would love and would accept that offer, Kay, at any time. So just hit me up.
All right, producers right. In that control room, let's get Tori Holt on the show. I do want to ask you. I want to ask you about Odell. I got you.
I hit you with the people.
Such a beautiful part of history in the NFL, of course, with one of the greatest teams ever. So I wanted to show you what Odell Beckham Jr. was rocking. I think this was ahead of a Week 10 matchup. He, of course, goes there. Yeah. He gets right away, right when he gets there, he's repping the greatest show on turf. How did this make you feel? Yeah, what's your takeaway from him so far there in his fit?
No, you know what? When I saw this, I was out at dinner, and my kids was like, "Dad, you see this? Odell Beckham is rocking the Greatest Show on Turf T-shirt." I was like, "What? Let me see it." No, I thought it was dope, man. You know, I mentioned I was out in L.A. a couple weeks ago talking to Cooper Kupp, spending some time with him. I also had a chance to speak to Odell Beckham, man. And the first thing he said to me was like, "Look, I'm so excited to be here. I'm around like-minded people, like-minded guys that are all about working, getting it done, and playing at a high level." So, I think Odell Beckham is, again, he's continuing to acclimate himself in this offense. They were a little off against Seattle a couple times, he and Matthew Stafford. He only had one catch in that game. But Odell Beckham plays the X position. He's very solid. He still gets off the football well. He still runs well. And he can run every route and win on every route. So I still think a lot of good football is ahead for Odell Beckham Jr. I call him Odell. And Sean McVay, I think, has enough offense and will do enough to make sure that he stays involved and put him in favorable situations to help this football team as they go down the stretch.
Tori, it may look like I'm not paying attention, but what I'm doing is texting the producers, telling them to get you on the program in that former Nate Burleson seat. Tori, thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Let's get you in the hall.
That's right, Sean.